I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about the current status of our bill, what is required for passage. I'm going to break that down into two sections. I'm going to cover five steps before introduction. I'm going to go over 7 points after introduction. And then I'll give you what my perspective is, very 30,000-foot view of where we are with Democrats and Republicans. Before introduction, the first thing we need to do is we need to get our bill text through Legislative Council. What is Legislative Council? Legislative Council is the group of lawyers who writes all bills in Congress to make sure that they are in line with existing law. This is going to have to be done by a Republican, and I've been led to believe that this takes about 2 weeks to do. Second thing we're going to need to do before introduction is get a CBO, that's Congressional Budget Office, or JCT, that's Joint Committee on Taxation, score. And a score is the effect that a policy will have on the budget, specifically the deficit, over 10 years. This is also going to have to be done by a Republican. And if everything is working well and they're properly motivated, the CBO and the JCT can do that in as little as three weeks. The CBO, the JCT, what they do is these are entities of Congress, for Congress, by Congress. Members of Congress are very accustomed to working with these agencies and their scores. They know how to use them, how to talk about them. They're very comfortable with them. It can be very simple. It's not going to be something like the Remy report in its detail. I've been told that it can be as simple as a single line in an email. Third thing that we need to do is we need to continue to pack House Resolution 195 and the Climate Solutions Caucus. And I do have to say, on these two things, we are doing extremely well on this. My goal here is to have Madeline ever... I always want her slides to be out of date. That's my personal goal, and I do hope she blames me for that. We're already doing extremely well on this. Between both those efforts, we now have 26 Republicans between those two. And when you think about that, what that means in terms of votes, if you assume all Democrats are not voting for a proposal, you only need 23 Republicans to vote, break with their party, and then you have a blocking minority within the majority. And so we saw that in action the first go-around on healthcare, and now we actually have three spare votes. This is not at all a safe number. I would like to get that much higher, but to look at where we were in September of 2015 before the Gibson resolution was introduced, or in January of last year before you had the Climate Solutions Caucus, this is a world apart. And so I really want to do that. Another reason why these two efforts remain important is because of the signal that sends to the Republican base. If you look at a study from 2012 in the journal Climatic Change by Brulee and his co-authors, what he looked at is how public opinion had changed around climate from the period of 2002 to 2010, and the number one factor that was correlated with, not necessarily causing, but correlated with changes in public opinion was when elected officials talked about climate change like it was something real, that humans had an impact on, and that Congress should do something about. And the interpretation was that when elected officials do that, that gives permission to the base to say, I can be a conservative and I can want to conserve. I am a part of the party of Teddy Roosevelt, part of the party that helped sign into law the Clean Air Act with one dissenting vote in Congress and signed by a Republican president. We want to get back to that America. It has existed, and I think that these two efforts, just by saying yes, I think that those Republicans are helping us to do that. Fourth thing that we need to do before submission is I think that we need to get at least 10 Republicans to get on board before submission as original co-sponsors. Why 10? Well, there's a certain degree of safety in numbers, and if you get to 10 before you put it out into the public, that gives them a lot more freedom to recruit their colleagues behind closed doors, and it avoids some of the arguments that you get if it was just one Republican saying, this is Don Quixote over here. If you get to 10, well, they can't all be Don Quixote. And so I think we need to list 10 Republicans. I would love it if there were also Democrats on that bill. I think that coming from a nonpartisan organization, you always feel more comfortable when you have bipartisan support for a bill. But unfortunately, I think in the current climate, the Democrats are negotiable. The Republicans are non-negotiable as original co-sponsors. The fifth thing that we need to do is we need to continue to get endorsers and resolutions. So I'm really happy that we had the BCL up here. This is going to be really important. We need businesses, we need military, we need industry groups, chambers of commerce, newspapers, mayors, scientists, faith leaders, and especially in the districts of those Republicans who are original co-sponsors. If you want your Republican to be an original co-sponsor, you need to get endorsements for them, which gives them the space to do that. You want to make sure that those are endorsers were part of the coalition that got them elected last time. If you get those people who helped get them elected last time, they know that they can take this step, and the people, the coalition that has already worked for them, is still going to be there. They're not going to desert them, and that's really important. If we do all that, I think you can get it introduced. Then we're in an entirely different world. And so once it's introduced, the number one thing that we need to do is we need to grab that media lever and we need to yank for all we're worth. We need to get lots of positive media and we need to combat the negative media. This is going to be a big story. Lots of people are going to want to cover it. Some are going to be positive, some are going to be negative. We need to make sure the positive outweighs the negative. So all those letters to the editor you've been working on, those editorials, those op-eds, that's going to be incredibly important. The second thing that we're going to need to do is we're going to need to get more co-sponsors. And this is that lobbying lever. And again, with those co-sponsors, I think that we're going to need to get, I would say, at least into the 40s in terms of Republican co-sponsors on the bill before it would come to the floor for a vote. It could be higher. And why do I pick 40s? Because that's about the size of the Freedom Caucus, and that seems like a good analog for a group of Republicans that are able to assert their agenda. Third thing we're going to need to do is get more endorsers. It doesn't stop once the bill is introduced. For every co-sponsor we're going to get, the more endorsers we can get in their district, especially those who are part of the coalition that got them elected in the first place, that is going to really help us. And that is the grass tops lever. Fourth thing, there are going to need to be hearings for the bill in Congress, formal events, and then we're also going to need to get it through committee. The committees of jurisdiction in the House, definitely Ways and Means. In the Senate, definitely the Finance Committee. Possibly in the House, you might also involve Energy and Commerce. And possibly in the Senate, you might involve Energy and Natural Resources or Environment and Public Works. To get it through committee, the chairman of those committees is going to have to allow it to come for a vote within the committee. And then the committee is after going to vote for it to go to the floor, where then the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader in the Senate would have to allow it to come for a vote. All those things are going to have to be in place. Six, ultimately, before this comes for a vote, we're going to need at least half of the Republican caucus on board. What do I mean by on board? I don't mean they have to be co-sponsors, but I do mean that they have to express in some way that they are going to be willing to vote for this. And the reason I say that is because of the well-known Hastert rule, which basically says if your caucus, if less than half of your caucus is not behind a bill, then you don't bring it to the floor, because that's going to undermine support for your caucus, for your leadership, and it's going to put people in an embarrassing place with having to take some votes. So I do think we're going to need to get at least 26 Republicans in the Senate and over 100 Republicans in the House to express some intention to their leadership to vote for this. And last thing on this, the only way I think this gets passed is if the entire country's focus is on it. Looking at the American political system, things happen not in a straight line. I think they happen in fits and starts. There's a crisis. Our national attention is focused on something very intensely for a month or two, and then it comes up to a vote, it passes, or it doesn't. I think that, and in that model, what we need to be focused on is being ready for when the nation's attention is focused on our issue so that we're able to pull those levers as we need to, as hard as we need to get this done. And so in the context of Mark's promise, when we add all this up, what does that amount to? We've got 2 weeks for legislative council, about 3 weeks for the CBO or the JCT. We got a month or two for the national focus, and you also have to allow for the holidays. And so I think that if we haven't started getting our bill text through Legislative Council in early October, then alas, Mark, at that point, I'm afraid you will have, you won't be able to do make good on your promise. So, but as Mark said, the power of a promise is orienting ourselves to making it happen. And so that's what we need to do, is we need to make sure that we're ready for that final kick between now and October to make sure this happens. So that's my assessment of what we need to do to get our bill passed before introduction, after introduction. What is the current status on Congress? How are Democrats doing? How are Republicans doing? With Democrats, I think that a great many would vote for our proposal. I think for a great many of those, it wouldn't be their first choice. I think there are a lot still who would prefer to use some of the revenue for other projects. I think there are a lot still who would have preferred a cap and trade system. But ultimately, I think that the majority of the Democratic caucus would vote for our proposal. A concern I do have about the Democratic caucus right now, and given that Republicans are in control of both the House and the Senate, I do think that if a carbon fee comes up, I think that it's very likely that, like the Climate Leadership Council proposal, it will involve some rollback of Obama-era regulations. And I think that is not in our policy. I just want to be clear on that. But I do think that that will be necessary. And I worry about how Democrats will respond to that. I think a lot of them would not be willing to compromise on that. So I do see choppy waters on that. And then I know that a lot of you have been frustrated in your relationships with Democrats, some of you surprisingly so. And the thing that I would advise there for a lot of Democrats, what the biggest gift we can give, the best advocacy we can do, is to give them hope. They are not in CCL, and so they don't hear the wonderful things that you get to hear about all those actions that we're taking, the success in the endorsers, the success on the Climate Solutions Caucus and the resolution. So please do tell them about that. Tell them about the endorsers that you're getting in their district, because in a lot of cases it will be news to them and it will be welcome news. And when you share that kind of news, I think that the opportunity is to move from you going and being a citizen lobbyist to you going in and being a citizen partner. And particularly when you're going and getting endorsements in their district for people who can help them come out on this issue and be strong, I think that they can help partner with you to identify who should you be reaching out to, and they may even be able to arrange some introductions. So think about, with your Democrats, how do you move from citizen lobbyist to citizen partner in helping to do this, particularly with endorsements. For Republicans, I will say that we have serious conversations going on with Republicans about introduction, getting to that first step of getting Legislative Council to draft up something. If you do have a Republican who is interested in joining that conversation, please do put them in touch with me. My team and I will do a follow-up, hopefully with you on the phone, the liaison or the group leader on the phone, and we'll figure out next steps. We obviously want to move that forward before October. And you will be asked which Republicans support this. There is an action logic in there. And in your folder, it's the blue document. And one of the questions in that action logic prepares you for just this question: who supports this? They're asking partly about Republicans in Congress. They're asking partly about who in the wider political landscape. There's also a sheet in your folder about who in the wider political landscape does that. But when asked specifically which Republicans, I would ask you to say, we're being judicious with those names. We recognize that it will be easier for them to achieve our goals if they don't have targets on their back. And so we are protecting their privacy, I guess you could call it. And if you are interested in joining this team, I'll put you in touch with my legislative director, and we'll see about getting you to be a part of that team. I've also heard from a lot of you a concern about our president, Donald Trump, and the concern that he will veto our legislation if we can get it through Congress. I just want to say I'm not concerned about this at all. And the reason I'm not concerned about it at all is because of what I just laid out for you. If we can get more than half of the Republican caucus willing to vote for our proposal, and if most of the Democratic caucus is already willing to vote for our proposal, then we can override a presidential veto. I'm much more concerned with Chairman Brady, Chairman Hatch, Chairman of the Ways and Means and Finance Committees in the House and the Senate, with Paul Ryan, and with Mitch McConnell. We need to get through those four first before we have to even start worrying about Donald Trump. Even if we were worried about Donald Trump, you also have to look at the people who he's appointing to his positions as advisors. Kevin Hassett has been nominated as the chair of the President's Council of Economic Advisors. Kevin Hassett is an economist who has published in the academic literature modeling carbon taxes. This is a guy who knows carbon taxes inside and out and has put his name to academic research on carbon taxes. Nominated as chairman of the President's Council on Economic Advisors. Of course, you also have Rex Tillerson, who is the Secretary of State, who has stated and stated again his support for revenue-neutral carbon taxes. You have Gary Cohn, the Chief Economic Advisor and the Director of the National Council, Economic Council. So these are all people who would be in a position to advise President Trump should this get to his table. And then finally, I do want to address, go back to the Climate Solutions Caucus and the resolution. And I do want to point out, I'm optimistic that we're going to be able to get a lot more people on both of those groups. And part of the reason I'm optimistic about that is if you look historically, midterm elections are generally not kind to the president's party, regardless of which party that president is from. And when you also look at the approval ratings of President Trump, they are historically low. And what the dynamic that's going to create is you're going to have members of Congress who are looking to distinguish themselves, if this continues, from an unpopular president. And this president just pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement. He has said very clearly, I, President Trump, am not in favor of doing something on climate. An easy way for a member of Congress to distinguish themselves from that president, should they be so inclined, would be to make a strong statement in terms of addressing the climate. So hopefully that's a little bit of a silver lining, and that's what I'm looking forward to over the coming years. So as I said, there will be time to ask questions this evening, and I hope that provides some useful input for your strategy sessions coming up.